I want to say something about race and representation in Northern Ireland. I was invited about a year and a half ago by the Northern Ireland Council for Ethnic Minorities. They wanted to make a sort of an intervention with journalism students and wanted to raise their consciousness a little bit about issues of race and how different racial groups and different immigrants were being represented in the Northern Ireland media. And I was very open to the idea, and I sort of said to them, look, listen, do you think there's a problem here? And they said, we do. You know, they named a couple of incidents. And I sort of said, well, these are kind of anecdotes. And I said, look, if you're going to go into a group of aspiring journalists and sort of suggest to them that their profession is doing something wrong, you really need to do a bit of research, otherwise you could do more harm than good. And I said, let me go away and look and see if we can find a few case studies and begin to look at and see if we could get some sort of evidence and get some kind of picture of exactly how race is being represented in the media at the moment in Northern Ireland. And I went off and identified the attacks on the Romanian residents back in 2009, in June 2009, which some of you may remember. And Northern Ireland at that stage achieved a degree of international and national notoriety because of these attacks, and was labelled the sort of hate capital of Europe and things like that. And so I want to talk a little bit about the representation of that, because I think what's interesting was, you know, again, I suppose like Nysam and myself, we went into this with a kind of an expectation that, you know, it would be a bit of a horror story in some respects that might be akin to the kind of coverage that you get in newspapers like the Daily Mail, and that's not the case, actually. Local newspapers in Northern Ireland, the Irish News, the Belfast Telegraph and the Newsletter, were actually very sympathetic in their coverage of the Romanian residents. But I want to look at that story in a little nuanced detail in some ways, because there are, I think, in some ways, problems with its coverage. But it's interesting, there's a number of there's the hard news element of the story, which, you know, kind of appears in the front page of the papers, and then there's also the kind of comments section. And especially in terms of the comments, there was a number of journalists who commented, and, you know, intelligent, well-informed comment on what sort of happened. But nevertheless, I want to offer a kind of a gentle critique of a May of how the story was covered in the editorials and on the front pages. When the story kind of broke nationally, the Channel 4 news presenter John Snow was interviewing Northern Ireland's Assistant Chief Constable Alistair Finlay on the 17th of June. And he kind of chided Finlay. He said, what is a discredit to policing is that you have had 5 days of attacks and no apparent consistent police presence. If this had happened in mainland Britain, there would have been a very much more considerable response. It seems as if Northern Ireland policing is more tolerant of racist attacks than anywhere else in Britain. And it was a sort of sense that, you know, the police had been very slow to react to these attacks that had taken place down in South Belfast. And maybe there's a case for that there, but also, you know, I think in some ways the media also didn't react terribly quickly. And in fact, I think it took the intervention, in my reading of the story, is that it took the intervention of kind of local anti-racist activists to bring the story to the attention of the local press. In other words, the Romanian residents needed kind of advocates who would sort of step forward and begin to get this story into the newspapers. When the newspapers did pick up on the story, the Belfast Telegraph's coverage of it, I would sort of say, was extensive. In fact, there's an argument to make that the Belfast Telegraph's coverage was extraordinary in some respects. They devoted a lot of time and space to it, and in a very particular way. The Irish News was pretty comprehensive, and the Newsletter tended to be a little bit more muted in its coverage, a little bit less coverage in it. But nevertheless, all the newspapers, as they editorially tended to be rather sympathetic to the plight of the Romanian residents at that time. There's a number of themes which kind of come out of the coverage when you begin to look at the front pages and the editorials. And one of the key themes that emerged was the idea of our sense of collective shame at what had happened.
Shame.
As the Belfast Telegraph's front page editorial, you have sombre black background, white writing on it, picture in the middle there, putting the seat of the sort of young Romanian child sort of looking out at you. You've brought shame on all of us. And that was a theme that kind of emerged in an awful lot of the coverage, this sort of idea of shame. It was mentioned by politicians, it was mentioned by a police constable, and it was also there in editorial comment also. And that sense of shame kind of sharpened as the story, you know, reached sort of national prominence, and Gordon Brown commented on it. He was then the Prime Minister. And as it became the kind of international attention, that sense of shame seemed to sharpen and become a great deal more obvious. And there also sort of seemed to be a kind of a need for a kind of demonstration and performance of that shame. It had to manifest itself in some way. And of course it did in the newspapers and what newspapers sort of said in their editorials. It was also there, as I say, very obviously in the front page of the Belfast Telegraph. But it was also there in the coverage of the reactions of some local politicians. Naomi Long had visited the families who had been, you know, had sort of left their homes and had taken up residence. I think by this stage they were in a leisure centre, they'd been in a church hall as well. And Naomi Long, who was the Lord Mayor of Belfast at that stage, went to visit them. And she was moved to tears, you know, by what she sort of seen. And that became part of the story. That was, you know, that became a, you know, kind of significant part of the story. Naomi Long had been moved to tears. And it wasn't just Naomi Long. I mean, the coverage also in the Irish News of a local man who went to visit them, and he was moved to tears as well. There was a photograph of him crying. And so what you get is this sort of demonstration of shame and pity, both in the front page newspapers, but also being acted out by a number of the politicians. So there was a concern with shame. I think to some extent that sort of sense, that performance of shame, was a concern also with how we looked in the eyes of a national audience and an international audience. And that concern was there from the very, very beginning. The SDLP councillor, Pat Murphy, was quoted in the Irish News on the 17th of June. He said he was appalled by what had happened, and he described it as a disgrace. And he said, he went on to compare the attacks to the pogroms in Belfast in the 1960s and 1970s. And then he said something interesting. He said, now members of the European Union are being forced out of their homes here. He says, this story will be reported all over the world, and how does it make us look? And that was a key theme that kind of began to run through this, was how we looked, you know, in the eyes of the world. And I want to come back and say a wee bit more about that in a moment. Because the other interesting thing about the coverage was not just the anxiety about how we were going to look collectively, and the importance about demonstrating our collective sense of shame, pity in this sort of circumstances, but also how the Romanian residents themselves looked. And there was an interesting construction of their image in the newspapers. And remember, the news is a construction. You know, there are choices of selection made about how a story would be presented. And the photographic images that accompanied them, there were an awful lot of them in the stories, I think were really interesting. You've got that one there. I'll stand up so that people can see this, OK? You've got that one there, the representation of the child. And in many respects, it was children in the visual representation of the story who came to stand in for these terrorised Romanian residents. And that was a theme that ran through all the coverage. I mean, if you sit down with all the newspapers and you lay them out the floor in front of you with all the coverage, it is a strange number of images there are of children and mothers. And of course, you know, that was part of constructing a story which would be a sympathetic story, sympathetic about the plight that these families were having to put up with, and critical of the people who were the kind of perpetrators of it. So you had these kind of pictures being reproduced very, very regularly. The Romanian residents don't say much in the stories. Now, maybe reasons to do with language and things like that, which may account for that. As I said at the start of it, they needed, it seems to me, advocates to sort of step in and speak for them and get the press interested in what was happening, and to bring the story to the newspapers' attentions. As I say, the Belfast Telegraph very enthusiastically took up the story once they knew about it. But I think also what's important about how they were constructed was not just about constructing them in a way which presented in a light which emphasised them as innocent victims of this. And of course, the children communicate that sense of innocent victimhood very, very clearly. But it also kind of made the Romanian residents kind of suitable objects of our pity and benevolence and our tears, you know. And while in many respects done for the best of intentions, it did have a tendency to objectify the Romanian residents. And as they present them as this kind of object of our pity. And again, so it was a story about us. You know, what was interesting about looking at this here was this was an attack, a racist attack upon these Romanian residents. But yet the whole story was really about us. It was about how we looked. It was about how we acted towards them. It was about how we felt about them. And they became this kind of object. And in a sense, there was an essentializing logic to that, you know, that there were us, benevolent, decent people who felt shame, and there was the innocent, terrorized, helpless Romanians who now were the object of that kind of pity. And what I think is kind of interesting about this kind of the construction of this story is, and as I said, I don't want to take away from the broadly sympathetic terms in which the story was constructed, and starkly different from the kind of coverage you would have expected in something like the Daily Mail. And also, I think it has to be said, different also from the way in which the general public, you know, there's some of the reactions in some of the phone-in programmes. You know, there's a number of journalists commented on the fact that, you know, that people have been phoning in talk back on the Nolan show, and they've been a lot less sympathetic to Iranian residents. But the journalists acted with a degree of responsibility and sympathy here, so I don't want to take away from that. But I do want to sort of point out that kind of problem in the story, this construction of these Romanian residents as a kind of object or another to us, and the essentialising kind of logic of that. Because underlying this coverage has struck me, and it was something which came up every so often in editorials, was a deep concern about the image and reputation of a rebranded Northern Ireland. How did we look, you know? This was our image and reputation, and the rest of the world would be looking at us, and what would they think about it? And, you know, we'll be familiar about that. You've seen that overwhelming concern acted out in a range of different stories. You'll have seen it in the flag protests. Protests, and people go, you know, how does this make us look? This will put off inward investment. This will put off terrorists. This will damage the economy. And you can see that it's a point that Robert made earlier on about that sort of combination between cultural image and the economy. They become kind of almost sort of inseparable. It's there again when you look at something like the G8 protests, the extraordinary amount of money spent on the security around that, the anxiety that protesters might besmirch in some respects the image and reputation of a rebranded Northern Ireland, when it was worth to us, I think it was the figure quoted, was £70 million worth of advertising that we couldn't possibly have bought. You know, so again, image and brand and economy came together. It was there again in the Giro d'Italia, you know, where, you know, there's that sort of thing about would the cyclists be pictured going past wall murals? Would there be painted curbstones? And then Mark H. Sturgeon intervenes and he goes, you know what, we should really make sure that the route is clear of all election posters, because God forbid that anybody should think that democracy has broken out in Northern Ireland. You know, so any political discourse is kind of shameful. Now, I don't want to compare the very positive sort of expression of democracy to this, but you could see again this thing which I think runs through so much of our coverage these days and makes it very difficult for us to have a sensible, rational public debate about anything. You know, it's because every time we try to do that, it's run back. What about the economy? Our image and reputation is at stake. What about the economy? So that kind of underlay everything. And it appears in a number of newspaper editorials. It appears in the comments which appear from various journalists, various politicians in those columns. And it was brought most obviously into focus by an article written in the newsletter on the 20th of June 2019 by Nick Garbutt. And it's called The Real Cost of Racism. That was the title of it.
Shit.
The images of terrified families being forced to their homes were carried all over the world. The media has dubbed Belfast the race hate capital of Europe. It's difficult to imagine a scenario more damaging to Northern Ireland. Our economy is so weak that were it not for the subvention of the British Exchequer, it would effectively be a third world country. Future prosperity depends upon our investment from overseas and the goodwill of Westminster and the rest of Britain. This week's events have caused immense damage to both, all at a time when our international image should be based on a place emerging from conflict deserving support and investment. The racism debate is therefore not just about decency and culture and respect, it is about our economic future as well. Now, my problem with this is, and well-intentioned as it may be, is the way it kind of reduces a story which for me is about human rights and social justice, and it suddenly becomes a story about us and about our economic well-being. And what I would say in conclusion, I'm looking at the Paddy stopwatch here, it's rapidly going down to 15 minutes, is something which dovetails in a sense with something which Malachy mentioned earlier on, where journalism's dying because the fees are dying. We don't have enough journalists at the moment, I don't think. Journalism is absolutely crucial to the lifeblood of a democracy. It isn't a coincidence that, you know, democracy arises at the same time as the mass media and the printing press. You know, there's a, you know, citizens need information to act upon when they come in to vote. And looking at this, it kind of struck me, why don't we have human rights and social justice correspondence? We have business correspondence, economic correspondence, political correspondence, health, education correspondence, royal correspondence, celebrity correspondence, sports correspondence. we don't have human rights and social justice correspondence. We're a community coming in what we aspire to, apparently, is a post-conflict society. We're also going through a double transition, which has opened us up to the vagaries of free market capitalism, which means the free movement of capital, but also labour. There's a changing complexity of the society we live in. Human rights and social justice is a kind of key issue. And wouldn't it be interesting to kind of invest in journalists with a specialism in that kind of area? I could have went on, but I better stop there.